Since it was first made known to the world, soon after its discovery in America, tobacco has brought pleasure and pain to people around the globe. Our guest this week, Ian Gately, describes it as an exotic plant that seduced civilization. Gately discusses the history of tobacco with Talking History's Fred Nielsen.
Tobacco is native only to the Americas, which is where humans first found it. In the thousands of years since, tobacco use has spread around the globe, ignoring the boundaries of nation-states, race, class, and sex. In the process, it has brought pleasure, stimulated intellectual inquiry, driven the growth of the American colonies, and enriched its manufacturers, and even, to a lesser extent, its opponents. It has also killed millions. There is no other plant quite like it. With me to discuss tobacco's equivocal place in human history is Ian Gately, the author of Tobacco, A Cultural History of How an Exotic Plant Seduced Civilization. Mr. Gately, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Who were the first humans to use tobacco, and what did they use it for?
Well, the first humans were in South America, and it was probably about 6,000 years ago. And it spread from there right through the Americas, so that by the time Europeans came into contact with what they called the New World, it was pretty much ubiquitous. It was used for an immense variety of purposes, and it was also used in a great variety of ways. One could start, say, in South America, where it was used as a medicine. It was used as an insecticide, and it was used as in religious worship. And finally, it was also used for pleasure. And from these, by a sort of sympathetic magic, the reasons for its use multiplied. Because let's take the insecticide as an example, that they used to blow tobacco smoke over seed corn before planting. And it's actually quite an effective insecticide in that role. It was used as such right up until the 1950s. But in these native cultures, by extension, if it improved the fertility of the crops, it might also improve the fertility of people. So they used to blow smoke over couples who had just been married on their wedding night in the belief that it would make them more fertile as it had done the crops.
Europeans then are introduced to tobacco when they get to the New World. What do they think they're seeing? What do they make of this new crop that has so many different uses?
Well, there was, one might say, a mixture of excitement and consternation. I mean, the first Europeans to come across it were if we discount the possibility of Viking smoking sometime in the 11th century, was Christopher Columbus. And in October 1492, when he reached Cuba, he sent a couple of men ashore on the lookout for Chinese because he believed he'd reached China. And they literally came, on the first meeting, they came across people smoking what appears to have been a giant cigar, as the size of cigars which people smoked for ritual purposes were really quite large. I mean, this was said to be as thick as a forearm. And a couple of his crewmen had a puff.
But ask if a cigar that large is still a cigar.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of the ritual ones used in South America are up to 9 feet long, and they're propped up on special cigar stands like tuning forks. But those were used for shamans by divination. If a casual smoker were to take one, they would be in probably quite serious trouble. But the Spanish didn't really pay very much attention to smoking. I mean, in part because their conquests were to the south. And also, and perhaps more importantly, was that instead of being initially curious as to the customs of the races that they'd conquered, they held them in disdain. So that smoking was seen really to be just another part of the devil worship which they perceived these cultures to follow. And so one could summarize then that the sort of initial reaction was probably bad, and it was bad on religious grounds. When the French and latterly the English came up to the coast of North America, their reaction was very different. I mean, often they'd come hadn't come so much as conquerors, but they were rather there to try and raid the Spaniards. So they were a little more curious in the customs of the cultures who they came across. And also they had to treat as opposed to, that they weren't there in the strength of numbers of the Spaniards, so that it was in their interest to cooperate with the cultures they came across. And they were very much more positively disposed towards smoking. I mean, to them, let's say that they had the leisure of its purposes being explained to them. So they took it up, at least on the sort of explorers, adventurers side, as a shield against hunger. so that they would that they saw the Indians smoking to ward off hunger when they were on the march, and they used it for the same purposes. And it's only when it got to, back to Europe that attitudes really began to change.
Well, tobacco becomes absolutely central to the English colonies in the southern part of what would become the United States, Virginia and other southern colonies. Raising it was terribly hard work, for which they soon acquired slaves.
That's quite right. I mean, when the English went out to found their colonies, it was on a very different model to the Spaniards. I mean, it was their aim wasn't subjection and establishment of an empire, at least not initially. It was to set up farms where they could grow things, which there was demand for at home, but they couldn't actually produce in the UK. So the colonies were founded to grow, let's say, olive oil and wine and even silk, and obviously to mine for gold too. But they kept failing. I mean, all of those crops have a certain lead time. And during the same period, there'd been a sudden growth in demand for tobacco in England. It had become fashionable. All the smart young men smoked it. There were poems written about it. There were plays in which smokers appeared, sort of performing slightly theatrical gestures with their pipes and blowing huge smoke rings. So there was a very real demand for it, and it could be grown very quickly. So you could have a crop in a year. And in essence, it was the salvation of the colonies in Virginia at first, because here was a product which they could make, that they used the assistance of the indigenous tribes too to grow, and that there was a ready market for it over the seas. The thing with tobacco growing, of course, is that it's extremely labor-intensive. I mean, if one looks at, say, the current production of tobacco in Cuba, where it's more or less done in a traditional way, that each plant will be visited 100 times in the course of its growth and it being picked. So in that sense, you know, the shortage of labor in the New World was always acute. And as soon as the English had a crop to grow, they needed as many hands as they could. And when a Dutch ship passed by with slaves for sale, which they'd actually hoped to sell to the Spanish, the English colonies took them at once. So tobacco, in that way, was responsible for the introduction of slavery to the United States.
There are, by the 19th century, good ways and bad ways to use tobacco. Charles Dickens comes over to the United States in the 1840s and thinks that the majority of Americans are using tobacco in the wrong way. They chew it and spit it instead of lighting it up, and he hates this with a fervor akin to his hatred of slavery.
That's quite right. I mean, it's interesting how tobacco use in the two continents diverged. I mean, in Europe, for instance, after tobacco was introduced, for a century or more, it was, and this is outside Britain, it was used as snuff. So people used to sniff it as opposed to smoke it. And the chewing it had never really spread to Europe as a fashion. Whereas in the United States, which were intensely rural, people had taken up chewing it as the standard mode of use. I mean, that may have come about because of in the early English colonies in the United States, smoking was banned by the church. I mean, it was considered to be ungodly, so that the only way people could take their tobacco was by chewing it. So what happened when Dickens came over? I mean, he was very keen. He had a big readership in the States. He was a Republican at heart, so it was felt that it would be a meeting of minds. You know, the great English Republican comes over to the greatest Republic in the world. But he seems to have he fell out of his bunk into a pool of tobacco spit on a riverboat, and that seems to have tainted him against it indelibly, to the extent that in his American travel notes, he seems to be obsessed with tobacco spitting. Though, curiously, it wasn't limited to him alone. The Fanny Trollope, the mother of Anthony Trollope, the great author, also wrote a comment on American customs and manners, and she was very keen to highlight differences, and tobacco was one of the great differences.
When and where did cigarettes first appear?
They are probably a Spanish invention, in that the Spaniards were great smokers and snuff takers, and all of their production was subject to a monopoly which ran through Seville. Now, for the poorer people who couldn't afford cigars, they would literally pick up scraps of tobacco and wrap them in paper, and that's the birth of the cigarette. But they were carried from there into France. After the Napoleonic Wars, the French became fascinated by the beauties of Andalusia and in particular by its seemingly carefree women who smoked cigarettes. And so French writers began to smoke, perhaps in order to seduce the cigarettes. And they began to talk about cigarettes in their work. So they gradually spread through Europe. I mean, at first they were frowned on. They were thought to be effeminate. They were thought to be, so many rituals had grown around smoking that, you know, it was considered to be very much a leisure activity. A man would sit down with his pipe, he would prepare it carefully, he would have a tobacco jar, he would have a smoking jacket, a smoking cap, and would sit round with his friends smoking. I mean, it was considered to be a sort of full-time leisure activity, almost like going for a game of golf. Whereas a cigarette could be enjoyed anywhere, and it was over very quickly. So as a consequence, it came in for quite a degree of criticism, and not just, say, in England, but especially, too, in America.
You write that by the late 19th and early 20th centuries, the answer to the question, at least in America, to the question, why do you smoke, was Buck Duke. Who was he?
Well, Buck Duke was the younger son of a tobacco producer in the South, who was responsible for automation of the cigarette industry. I mean, cigarette use spread gradually in the latter half of the 19th century. But even though there were quite a lot of people buying cigarettes, they were still all made by hand. And Duke had the idea of introducing a cigarette machine, which in the 1880s he finally managed to do. Now, this brought with it all the benefits of automation in that it meant that very many more cigarettes could be produced and also that they could be done at a much cheaper price. He was also a fan of advertising. I mean, he introduced cigarette cards into the packaging of his cigarettes, which had pictures of actresses or baseball stars, latterly. So it's a two-pronged thing. He automated production, thereby making cigarettes more available and cheaper, and he marketed his production so that he had a variety of brands and that most people, when they came across a cigarette for the first time, would do so really courtesy of Buck Duke.
I'm curious what, if anything at all, we should conclude from the fact that Hitler was vehemently opposed to smoking while Franklin Roosevelt declared cigarettes essential to the American war effort in World War II.
Well, I mean, Hitler's opposition was perhaps, I'm no psychologist, but, you know, his desire to have absolute control over everything and the idea that people might be smoking and damaging themselves seemed to him to be unacceptable, whereas Roosevelt was a realist, saw that his soldiers smoked. I mean, it seemed to have been a lesson of the First War, so ensured that they were always had a constant supply. I mean, there has been some unfortunate side effects from, let's say, the polarization of the Nazi opposition to tobacco and the American, it being held in favor by Americans, in that Nazi scientists were the first to discover a link between smoking and lung cancer. But the research was tainted by the people who had produced it. So one might say that it set back the cause of showing that smoking is actually dangerous by a good 10 years.
Is the cigarette, as some have claimed, the biggest killer in history?
Well, if one looks at the statistics, there's certainly a good claim. I mean, the figures for the United Kingdom, for instance, that cigarettes kill or contribute to the deaths of 120,000 people a year. Now, that's more per annum than were killed in the Second World War. So it's certainly a giant killer. I mean, that the World Health Organization considers it to be an epidemic, and an epidemic far more deadly than AIDS or, you know, any of the other current diseases.
We only have about a minute remaining. You conclude that tobacco is the most equivocal substance in daily use. I wonder if you could elaborate on that.
Well, it's difficult to imagine if a product such as a cigarette was invented today and had to pass through health and safety legislation that it would be legal at all, so that its survival really relies on custom, but it also relies on profit. In the sense that the production and sale of cigarettes is incredibly profitable. But smoking has been related to taxation almost since it appeared outside of the traditional cultures of the Americas. And it's a balance between the danger it causes and the profit it makes for governments. and other people involved in the industry. So I think that's what makes it particularly equivocal. It's extremely dangerous, but it's extremely profitable. And governments seem to have taken the view that the profit outweighs the danger.
Well, Mr. Gately, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Well, thank you very much indeed for your time.
I've been visiting with Ian Gately, the author of Tobacco, A Cultural History of How an Exotic Plant Seduced Civilization.